There's Joseph Campbell, who's kind of like this hero's journey architect that no one maybe knows, but like kind of is the architect of like the Western psyche in many ways, at least pulled it forward in these images. And, you know, the idea of the hero's journey gets filtered through the Western mind to kind of think of like, oh, it's like me going and like doing my thing. And maybe I've got one person. I mean, it's played out in Star Wars, right? Like Luke Skywalker, ultimately it's him, you know, he's got Obi-Wan, he's got Yoda, but like, it's really brass tacks. It's Luke Skywalker. But when you really understand the hero's journey mythologically, it is an individual that is spurred on by the needs and desires and affirmation of the community to leave. And in that quest, what they do is they discover the thing, not only that they need, they don't only become who they are, but they bring that back. The whole point of the hero's journey is actually to bring that back to the community.
Hey everyone, what's happening? I am super stoked to welcome you to the Marley Williams podcast, where we will explore authentic leadership, transformational facilitation, and how to create epic experiences for your audiences every single time. I am your host, Marley Williams, bringing you thought-provoking insights, expert interviews, and actionable strategies to unlock your potential as a leader, facilitator, and speaker. Thank you for joining me on this journey of growth, transformation, and impact. Let's lead together. The Marley Williams podcast begins now. Let's dive in. Well, hey, everybody, what is happening? I'd love to welcome you back to the Marley Williams podcast, where this week, my friends, you are in for a treat. We are hanging out with Dr. Michael Simmons, aka Shadow Mike. I learned the origin stories of that name came from a moment at the Energy Exchange where there were two mics. How do you distinguish yourself at a networking event? AKA Shadow Mike was born into the world. Mike, I'm so stoked to have you here with us today.
Oh, Marley, it is a true gift. The Energy Exchange, just a shameless plug for you. Anyone listening, I mean, fly in, drive in, come to the next Energy Exchange, because it's not life transforming as much as like community and network transforming. I mean, it is life transforming because you connect with people who reflect back these like golden vibrations that are in you. I mean, that's my experience. I think that's the experience of a lot of people. So it's a real gift to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's been interesting trying to like articulate what the Energy Exchange is. While, yes, it's a networking event, it is this experience we were just talking about of a gift to be witnessed in community. And the question that people get asked all the time, what do you do, right? And how do you get to kind of play with the answer to that while being seen by other people who can reflect that back to you? Because I think it's hard for people to see their own gifts, to see their own magic, and to have that space to be able to do that. So thank you for being an ambassador of the Energy Exchange. And yes, if you are listening to this, if you're thinking about it, if you're looking for community, looking to find your people, we'd love for you to join us. So today is really a deep dive into this idea of shadow work, what it is, what it isn't, why people avoid it maybe. You know, Shadow Mike is an expert shadow work coach and soul initiator, which I love. And I would love for you to just share a little bit about you, your story, your journey, like what brought you out of all the things you could niche down on or focus on as a coach and as a spiritual kind of mentor and guide. Why shadow work?
You know, I developed a unique set of skills like Liam Neeson, perhaps in my childhood, to distinguish what was not being said. And a lot of our gifts are birthed out of surviving. And, you know, there's a lot there. But I will say that as I got into fatherhood, as like I was like 10 years into marriage, there was this sense that like there was a lot not being said in the collective around me. And if you want to know what the shadow is in a room, just look around and see who's not there, who's not welcome, what's not being said. Because you'll often find what you're looking for by the vacancies, the negative space. And for me, the negative space, the vacancy, was around like being able to process both the deep, deep shit of life, but also like the profound abundance that was available. I had essentially rooted myself in a collective environment that didn't know what to do with this outside the margins of what was allowable. And I was experiencing personally, but also in a number of my clients, people that, you know, just friends who were experiencing things that were just simply not part of the conversation. That's what led me into this idea of shadow work, because shadow is something that we have as individuals. You know, it's the hidden part of our life, but it's something that we're immersed in at a collective level, and that collective communicates back what we should hide. So then we do, in order to find acceptance. Usually this is where at midlife we discover, oh, I need that. I need that part of me. That I need my anger. I can't just get rid of that. Oh, I need the ability to say what I want and embody that. I can't just continue to do what has been ascribed to me or my gender or my sexuality. Like, I have to expand beyond that. And that for me personally, and in terms of what I do with clients, is where the juice is, because it's connecting with that moment where like, okay, the old is fading away. Something new is coming up, but I don't know what to do with it.
I think it's so powerful, that idea of what's not being said, who's not in the room, or, you know, when people say something, but you can hear like there's something behind it that's like, yeah, it's the things that we hold back, the things that we hide. I think about this idea of shadow of like, oh, if they really knew X, Y, or Z about me, they wouldn't love me, like me, accept me, believe me, support me. If they really knew, you know, it's like, what are the things that we're hiding or holding back? I think to me, doing this, the idea of shadow work is like coming into our wholeness of like how much, so often I feel like we look for acceptance from others outside of ourselves, but how much of ourselves are we not accepting, right?
There's a quote that's ascribed to a philosopher, Plato, says, every light casts a shadow, and the closer we get to the light, the larger the shadow becomes. And you can play this out. Turn off all the lights in a room and turn on only one lamp. If you get really close to that lamp, you will cast this massive shadow. And that's what can happen when we try to live too much in this place of acceptance from the collective, from the environment around us, you know, meeting the expectations and the assumptions and the rules, all of that. We can move so close to the light that we end up creating this massive part of us that is submerged, that's out of reach. And shadow work is essentially about being able to turn and face that. One of my favorite authors, he's a mythopoetic guy. His name's Robert Bly, and he's dead now, but he likens the shadow to a long bag that we drag behind us. And shadow work isn't about finding all the hidden stuff in our life and dumping out the bag like it's Halloween. It's really about, can you have access to what's there? Do you have a range of motion to see behind you what you previously would have tried really hard to avoid? Shadow work is really about building relationship. It's highly relational. And wholeness looks like, can you connect with that part of you? You don't have to bring it front and center, but are you in relationship with it enough to where when you encounter it in your relationships, it doesn't trigger you to this kind of fight or flight space? Are you able to stay embodied and access that energy?
Right. It's not just like, oh, I have to dump it all out all at once, right? But to notice it, to name it. I like this idea of like anything that we're unaware of can have a grip on us, like have a hold on us that we're like, we're just not aware of it. But with awareness, there's freedom and choice. It's like, okay, what do I want to do with this? How do I want to work with this, right? Not seeing it as something that's holding us back or in the way, but it's like, what is this here to show me or to teach me? And so I'm curious, like, what part of someone's journey do they tend to find you or come to you? Like, what's coming up for people in their world where they're like, I need this? Because I think it could be hard to like just raise your hand and be like, I need to do shadow work, right? So like that might not be where people are, but like, you know, for people that are listening to this, that are curious about like, huh, this is intriguing. I'm interested, like, what are some of the things that people say when they come to you and are ready to do this work? Where are they on their path, on their journey?
Oh, I love this. You know, I have clients who are in their mid-20s, and I have clients who are in their mid to late 70s. And what is common across every client I've ever had is there is this threshold that they are approaching, that they're in, where life is requiring something of them that they've not lived out. They're entering into parenthood for the first time. They're entering into this search for meaning and purpose that has just gotten louder and louder. They've been married and they've had a couple decades of a relationship that was just not quite ever theirs. And that's dissolved. And now they're asking this question, you know, in their 40s, 50s, of like, what is my life? I have clients who are in what they would call the last quarter of their life, asking like, what is my role now? And there's a book by Connie Zweig, who's a Jungian analyst, who wrote a book called Shifting from Role to Soul. And this kind of soulful, it's still a role, yes. I mean, there can be enrolled, but it's also something that's more about presence in a way that's particular to that last quarter of life. And so it can be really hard if someone's looking back saying, well, what have I done? Have I wasted my life, right? So it's always a threshold. There's a calling, right? And I liken it to, I use Disney movies as kind of my metaphor template in life.
Love that.
And yeah, I mean, it's my own childhood. It's my experience with my kids, but you know, it's imaged in Moana. That's the one that's coming forward. Oh, and in Frozen. I mean, these are the newer Disney movies where there is something beyond, right? Like Moana senses this calling, this drawing out beyond the waves. And everyone wants her to stay, right? Wants her to stay small, wants her to be here because they need her to be the pillar of stability for the community. But in Moana 1, she actually discovers, she goes into this cave. And while she's in that cave, she connects to the spirit of her ancestors. And there's a moment where Moana looks up. She's like, we were voyagers. And she's like, oh my gosh, we weren't just people who settled on an island and white knuckled life. We were people who ventured off. That was the moment for her that like catalyzed all the intuition that she had about leaving the island. And it was ultimately to bring about healing for the island. It wasn't to escape it. It was in order to bring about this wholeness. So it was a calling. There's something in their life that's either calling from them. It may feel like the outside. It, like, oh, I've got to move there. I've got to move towards that physically. It could also be an internal shift that's like, I can't keep living this way. Like, I don't want, this is not producing what I want in my life. Those moments are the thresholds where it's like, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to have to leave behind everything I've known. I'm going to enter into this threshold, which is a space in between, the transformational space. But what's on the other side? I don't know what it is. That's where people connect with me because I want to guide them through the threshold to release what hasn't worked or isn't working anymore, what served them well, but isn't anymore. And to initiate them, that's where the soul initiator piece is. Because the idea of soul is, it comes from the Latin. And in Latin, it is anima. And it's where we get our word animate. So when you are being initiated into this new season of life, it's about your soul being animated again, to find that sense of purpose and to embrace it and embody it and live it out.
Wow, I love Moana. And I love this idea of like this rites of passage moment, this initiation, this calling. And I do feel like our intuition sometimes starts as a whisper. And then it's like, if we don't listen to it, it becomes this like roar. And how some of the people, like her community, it's like wanted her to stay and thinking that you're nuts or crazy or selfish or that you don't care about that, you know, right? It's like, how much can you trust yourself? And I think that that's the power of having a guide along the way, right? Like Moana had found her guide along the way to help Maui to help her see the gifts in this moment, because I think that that threshold for a lot of people can be really scary, right? You get to the edge of something, right? The end of a career, the end of a relationship, the end of doing the thing that you thought you should do and you're not happy. And there is this like on the edge of this cliff, now what moment? And like the other side looks and seems like far away, impossible. And it's like, we can't see the bridge, the walkway, the pathway, and to have someone really like support you on that journey. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that feel that like stuck or stagnant energy. And then there's the stirring, and then there's these questions like, is this all there is? What am I here for? And I literally wrote this today in a post, and it's like, your calling is not an accident. And like the things that you're drawn to, there's a reason for it. And the invitation is, how much can you trust that knowing, right? So I think as a coach, it's like, how can I help people trust themselves and to like have space where they can share those things where it might not feel comfortable or safe to do that with maybe friends or family, you know, or people think they're crazy or whatever it is, right? Like you might be going through like a dark night of the soul. I did everything that I checked off all the boxes. I did all the things and I'm still not happy or miserable, or it doesn't feel like my path anymore. And I think it takes so much courage to acknowledge that moment, because I think what I see is so many unhappy people kind of like grinding it out, pushing through and trying so hard to make something that's not fitting fit. Because that's what we were told or taught, or the narrative or culture or society or our parents, or, you know, we don't want to let people down. We don't want to disappoint people. The fear of judgment, or I've worked so hard, or I spent all this money on this degree and I don't want to be a doctor anymore. Like I don't want to be in this marriage anymore and we have kids or whatever it is. Like there's so much, so much fear that can come up, or like the internal judgment, the fear of judgment from other people. And so when someone comes to you, right, and they're in this place, they're at the threshold with you, what does that journey look like? I'm just so curious if you can kind of like walk us through this idea. And I know it's probably different for everybody, but like this idea of this rites of passage, this soul initiation. And I think about the people that listen to this podcast, right? You know, like my audience is anyone who resonates with it, but really speaking to leaders, coaches, guides, facilitators, people that like, I believe that the people that are listening to this feel some sense of a calling in their life. They're either in on their path or doing the work, or they're like, I know I'm meant for more and I'm here to serve. And yet maybe I feel stuck, or I'm having some of these thoughts, like these limiting, but well, who am I? And like, I don't have what it takes or whatever. So people come to you, where do you start on that journey with them? We're at the threshold, we're at the edge, we're at the cliff. We want to say yes to that next chapter, adventure, iteration of our journey. Where do you start with people who are there?
Yeah, well, you know, I liken the shadow to a forest. And throughout mythology, fairy tales, Disney movies, which are fairy tales, the forest is always a place of transformation, but it's also a place that is very terrifying to enter into. I mean, honestly, initiation is often thought of as something you experience once and then you're initiated. But really, life itself is an ongoing process of being initiated many, many times. And initiation has three movements. There's separation from what you've known. There's the ordeal, or the liminal space where it's just not formed. And then there's this movement of return, right? You discover, you find, you integrate whatever it was that you went in to find and integrate, and you return back, but you don't return back the same. You've been changed. And now what you do in the world has changed. Maybe not the role. Maybe you're a leader in a company. It doesn't mean that you'll, you know, you're going to drop everything and like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go live by myself as a hermit now, right? It's important to not literalize the experience. It's meant to be internal and then be the new operating system that then animates your life and your company, your team, whatever it is. I love working with leaders because the stakes are even higher. You know, we're not talking about someone who doesn't have anyone, like you don't have employees. I mean, you're not having to deal with someone whose salary depends on your decisions. But there is that, as a leader, it can be very easy to get into a fallacy that says, I can't make changes because it's too big of a ship. It's too much to manage. Too much is at stake. You kind of have to flip the script. It's like, actually, you can't afford to not continue to initiate. Your company, the people that depend on you, can't afford for you to not invest in yourself in like massive ways. If you aren't functioning optimally, if you're not enjoying your life, you will create that in that atmosphere. That's the atmosphere that you will create in your family, in your organization. You have to invest in yourself in ways that allow you to reanimate, to become ensouled again, where your actions, the way that you're managing or leading, is coming from a place of soulfulness, but also a place where your soulfulness is being embodied in your organization. It's this embodied spirituality that can look like a million different things. But to get someone started in that, there's a quote I want to bring forward that I know you love quotes. And so this is this is one for your Rolodex.
Bring it. Marla. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Okay. This is from the German, he's a German monk from a number of centuries ago. I can't remember which century, but Meister Eckhart. And he says, when the soul wishes to experience something, she throws an image of the experience out before her and enters into her own image. What this is communicating is that when we start to initiate, right? Life will initiate us. We don't need a guide to initiate us. Life will initiate us. But when we start to experience the initiation, we will start to discover people, experiences around us that illuminate something, like we are drawn to them. There's something in that person that they have the answer. They have the elixir. They have the holy grail that we've been looking for. And this is what Meister Eckhart means by when the soul, when our sense of animation wishes to be animated again, we will see it first in someone else. So as leaders, who are you drawn to? Who suddenly has captured your imagination? And it's important to do this consciously, to say, oh, okay, they are really drawing me. I have to be around them. I have to get into their space. I have to get into their circle, because what's happening, and this is kind of how shadow works. Shadow doesn't just like surface up like a bubble from the ocean and now, oh, now it's integrated. Often goes out first in the form of a projection. We project what we are trying to integrate out into our environment, and then we enter into it. Now, when a lot of people hear shadow, they think of like the bad things, the maladaptive tendencies that tend to destroy our lives. But Jung, Carl Jung, which is where the idea of shadow comes from, his development, his psychological framework, Jung once said that the shadow is 90% gold. Most of it's just like all the goodness that wasn't allowed. It wasn't safe. It wasn't appropriate as kids. And so we buried it. So the work here is to see what is it we're drawn to. It's a different episode to talk about what we're repelled from, but that's part of it. But like, who are you drawn to? Whose illumination is pulling you forward? And then consciously moving into their atmosphere so that you can start to integrate that stuff. You can start to embody that, because before you can just do it, you need something reverberating or mirroring that back. Like, I love this metaphor because I think it's so profound and so simple, but like, you remember when there was an actual projector with film running through it? Okay, so you go to the movie theaters. I remember as a kid looking up there and like seeing the dust through the light beam and like just imagining it, you know, what's up there. And if you want to see the movie that's happening in your unconscious, in your shadow, you can't go up there and pull out the film and read anything. You're not going to capture anything. You have to see it on the screen. So seeing it on the screen is how you then start to metabolize and integrate the story, the characters, the mythology, the energy that essentially is yours. You just had to see it out there first.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I, again, it's like there is a reason why you are drawn to certain guides, mentors, teachers, speakers, authors, right? And I love the simple quote that says, if you spot it, you got it. You see something in someone, and how I describe it is like, it's just a fuller expression of something that's already in you. Otherwise, you wouldn't see it. Not everyone is drawn to every speaker, coach, guide, author. And so it's like, I think that noticing who and what captures your attention. And I think for so many people, and I've fallen into this trap of like the compare and despair mode. Well, they have something I don't have. Or what are they doing that I'm not doing? And this like, they're better than me, they're smarter than me, right? Versus like, how can I use that as inspiration versus, you know, comparing myself to them? It's like, oh, who I want to be and what I want to create, like they're doing it. It's possible. Or what would my version of that look like, right? And not trying to be them, but I think the invitation is, how do I be a more fuller expression of myself? Because I think I've thought about this before. I'm like, why do people love going to concerts or going, you know, going to see like live music, right? You have it right on your phone and you can listen to it anywhere, anytime, as many times as you want for free, right? But yet people get on planes, they spend thousands of dollars, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on tickets. And I'm like, what is it about seeing a performer? And I've thought about this a lot, and this idea of like to see someone do what they were born to do in the most energetic capacity, their vitality, the energy that gets generated in that space because of like who they're being and like the people that they're drawing to them, right? And so I think that people love that because it's like, where are we not living our like fullest expression of ourself? We're not singing as loud as we can or dancing as much as we can. And like when you're in, when people go to like Burning Man or they go to these festivals, or it's like they're given this permission to play in the playground of all of the expressions of who they are, where in their day-to-day life, they have to wear the suit and tie, they have to be buttoned up, they have to have it all together. And I love what you said. It's like, I think I've had that story that our shadow is just like all the parts we don't like, that we need to embrace and accept versus all the gold that is in there. And, you know, I've been reading about my astrology. I'm a Gemini rising. And the astrology that I keep hearing is like, how unhinged can you be? What would the unhinged versions, if you're doing videos or reels or speaking or sharing your message, like you're still doing it because you want people to like you. You want people to accept you. You want people to get you, right? But it's like, if you didn't give a fuck, like, you know, what would you say? Like, I think that that is such a cool question. You know, it's like, anyway.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, if you were just living out that authentic expression, like, what would come out? And the filtration, I mean, this gets into Jung's psychology is not something that he developed, that no one had ever developed. He reframed it with certain language, a lot of which he adopted from Freud, but it was his experience. Jung's psychology is too spiritual for the psychological community, and it's too psychological for a lot of spiritual communities because he lived it. Like, it was just how he lived. It was this kind of fullest expression of himself. And when we talk about shadow, one of the things you're bringing forward here is the concept of persona. And persona gets a bad rap too. When I say persona, most people will hear like, oh, that's like your false self, or that's like this kind of fake veneer of who you are. But really, from Jung's perspective, persona was just, it was like the way in which you engaged your environment. You can think of it as like, this is how you meet it. This is how you meet your environment. If it's negative 10 degrees outside, you're going to meet that environment with a really thick jacket, really thick coat, multiple layers. If it's 95 degrees outside, you're going to meet that environment with a different clothing, right? Like, you're going to wear a bathing suit for sure. But like, just because you have these different ways of engaging doesn't mean they're fake. They're still you expressing something about yourself and communicating that. And so as leaders, what I think is really helpful, and I've had a number of leaders as clients, our work is to help them embrace an authentic persona, a way of connecting with their environment that both reveals who they are, but it also helps to conceal the parts of themselves that are not for that space. A lot of leaders kind of maybe oscillate back and forth between, well, I want to be authentic, but when I'm authentic, it feels like I'm like exposed to my whole environment. So then I like retreat, and it's this pendulum swinging thing. But you can embrace a certain way of engaging your environment, a way of leading that is authentic, that is still concealing a lot of the energy that you want to keep for your closest relationships, for yourself. Like, you can communicate all that stuff without it deteriorating the energy that you need for the rest of your life. I mean, it really is essential, because what is often not understood is that if you're a leader, you're also getting projected onto. You are the screen that people are sending their stuff onto, you know?
Oh, yeah. I love that metaphor and analogy, because it's like, some people think that what authenticity is like, no matter what temperature it is outside, that you walk out naked.
100%.
You know, You're just like, that's not authenticity, right? Because that would be uncomfortable for you and everybody else, right? Like, but it's also like, I get to choose what color jacket and what type of hat. And I might not choose to wear a sundress, and I'm going to wear board shorts and a tank top, right? Like, it's like, I get to choose what I'm wearing and choose how to like meet the moment. It's really interesting, you know, this idea of like performative leadership versus intuitive leadership, where I'm able to like read the room and meet the moment and like really understand what's the temperature, what's the energy, what's the weather, and how do I show up with the fullest expression of myself that makes sense for this particular moment, audience, community, what's my relationship with them, what kind of rapport, and how can I show up and be real and not feel like I have to like bare my soul to every single person that I meet, because that's just not being mindful to them. Or we get to protect our own energy as leaders and still show up in an authentic way. And I think that that's just like such an interesting dance for people. And it's not an all or nothing. Either like I'm walking out naked, or I'm wearing like an armor suit where like no one can get in. I'm just going to act like I have it all together and all figured out, even though I'm terrified, right? There is the in between. And that's the gray zone. That's like the messy middle that people get to play in and learn from. And, you know, I always say like leadership is about being in a position where people think that you're not doing it right, or they could do it better. And like, because visibility is vulnerability. When there's any type of exposure, there are moments where you could be made wrong, or where people get upset. You know, it's like, and how do I lead in the most potent and powerful way?
Yeah. You know, this idea of rites of passage, I think can be really kind of brought down to like an everyday level for leaders to use as they enroll and as they de-roll from certain environments, right? If you're going into a meeting there's a certain image that people will hold you down with, you know, they'll project that onto you at some level because it's your role. Well, it's important that you have some kind of ritual. Sometimes it needs to be really overt and external, and you got to do it consciously before it becomes the unconscious, like, this is just what I do. But if you can have a process that allows you to enroll into that space so that you're stepping into that persona, that thin slice that communicates the parts of you that need to be communicated in that space, then you will inherently protect what needs to be protected, or what needs to be concealed, what doesn't need to be brought forward. And then when you exit that meeting, you can have a little ritual that allows you to de-roll. De-rolling is so essential. I mean, both of them are, but you know, this idea that like, okay, you have been in a role, you have been performing a social function. That isn't you in totality. It doesn't mean that it's not part of you, but there's a de-rolling that you might want to do after that so that you can then engage your life from a place of a bit more abundance, a bit more spaciousness, until those worlds become more fluid and you can move in and out of them. If a leader is incredibly empathic or intuitive, really sensitive to energy, you may need to do rituals that allow you to like pull in this like warrior energy. And then afterwards, a ritual that allows you to release that warrior energy. One of my favorite authors, Robert Johnson, a Jungian analyst, and he was an Episcopal priest as well, but he once said, he would talk about when he'd get done speaking, he would go into his hotel bathroom. He would get like a towel and like get it sopping wet, like really heavy. And he would stand in the shower and he would take it and just slam it down as hard as he could into the tub. And for him, that was a way of releasing all the energy that was coming at him while he was speaking, because it would just kind of mix up the wiring for him. He was able to diffuse it and like take that energy, put it into the towel, and then diffuse it into the earth. Like very magician-y, but like you might need to do something like that that allows that energy to move out of your body in a visceral, powerful way.
Yeah, I think that when we are as leaders, you know, whether it's like leading a meeting or speaking in front of thousands of people or leading a workshop or facilitating, or you know, my partner's a nurse, right? She's around a lot of like, you know, there's people that are going through surgery and like there's health related issues and there's recent things that come up. And it's like, if we're not mindful, we could take a lot of that on. So what are like having those cleansing rituals, whatever those are, to not take that, the weight of the world on? Like, I love this phrase of like, how do you care about people but not carry it for people? And as leaders, how do you care for your people without carrying it, right? Without taking it everywhere with you? I care. And it's like, okay, what do I do between, if you actually go to a physical workplace, what do you do on the way in, right? I hear that as this like kind of, how do I enroll myself in this? What are my rituals as I go into the workplace or the office or a speaking engagement for me or before doing a podcast or whatever it is? And then what do I do on the other side when I'm like leaving work before I step into my home space? Or how do I reset my nervous system or my energy if I've gotten activated, so that we aren't carrying that into our conversations with our, you know, partners or our kids, or like taking it out on, it's like, how are we really being mindful of our energy? And again, to not see that as like, it's not inauthentic to do that. There are times where like I'm took a red eye to go speak at an event and it's like I have to bring the weather and I am white and tired. But maybe what some people think authenticity might look like is like getting on stage being like, man, I'm wiped. I don't know if I can do this. And it's like, they just paid me 10 grand. I'm not going to freaking do that, right? But I can show up and bring that energy because I'm here to serve and I'm like here to show up and meet this moment.
I had a big shift recently with our dear friend Lisette King, and it was a moment where I had this realization that as a facilitator, I carry this unconscious belief that I always had to be plugged into an outlet. Like I was like a rechargeable battery. And so as soon as you took me off the charger, I had a certain amount of energy that started to deplete the moment I was off the charger. And the shift came when I realized that I was solar powered. As I move through life, I can actually create the energy I need. And that shift was so profound. I mean, this gets into kind of the religious upbringing that I had, which is like, okay, if you want to really be the most impactful person, you've got to spend time with God. You know, you've got to be in the Bible and reading and praying all this. And it was almost like, okay, well, there's a place where you do that and you have to get plugged in and then you diminish that charge over the course of a day. Well, to believe that I'm solar powered changed the whole game, because first of all, it means that it doesn't depend on me to be in a certain location or state of mind. What it requires is for me to align with what I'm feeling right now, and then open myself up to this source energy that allows me to be filled back up. Like, if I'm living and leading and facilitating from a place of like, actually, it's just flowing through me, then like, you tap into energy you didn't even know you had, because you're not depending on some kind of electrical current that depends on you to plug into it, right? That is a game changer, and people feel it. People feel authenticity. I can't cite where I heard this, but there was a study done once, you know, that kind of phrase, that measured the vibrations around different emotions, the lowest of which was shame, right? When we are experiencing shame, our energetic frequency is like closest to death. Like, if you're dead, and then there's shame right above that, okay? But the highest was authenticity. Authenticity was the highest. If you are living authentically, people feel it and they are brought into their own authenticity unconscious. Some people are conscious of it, but a lot of people just be unconsciously, I'm now feeling like myself around you and in this space. If you can be authentic, which doesn't require you to stand up and say, well, I'm exhausted, but I'll do my best. It's like okay, I'm authentically exhausted to yourself. And then just start opening yourself to the unknown, untapped energy that is available to you in abundance. And then you're stepping into miraculous spaces there, because who knows what will happen then.
100%. I love that so much. This difference between like, I have to plug myself in versus really being open to receiving the energy from whatever it is that you believe in, creator, source, the universe. And that is, there's an unlimited supply. And that's why, you know, I have these mantras before I speak. It's like, show up and serve. That is my number one mission. That is what I'm here for. And my good friend and mentor, Preston Smile, says, don't speak unless spoken through. There's that quote that's like, that's kids, like, don't speak unless you're spoken to. Don't speak unless you're spoken through, meaning like, how open can I be as a leader and like tuned in and tapped into an energy that's more co-created? And I think as like an Aries and a seven and like all of these things, like for a long time, I felt like it's up to me to plug myself into that wall. It's up to me to have the ideas or the energy, like, and like putting all this pressure versus I am co-creating something even more miraculous, even more powerful, when I can trust myself and something bigger than me, that this is what I am called to do. This is what I'm meant to do. And I think that's the power, like kind of going full circle, like when you are in your zone of genius, or this idea that I'm playing with, this idea of like, what's your zone of energy? Like when you are doing what you are here to do, it doesn't matter how many hours of sleep you got. Because you are going to bring the weather. You are going to show up. You're like, I am here. Like, this is it. Let's go. Every time, every stage, whether there's 5 people or 500 people or 5,000 people, it's like, if I've changed one person's life, like through me being in my essence, like sharing my gifts, and this, your energy is this, your capacity and your vitality, and that is unlimited. There is no limit to that. Like, become solar powered. I love that, right? Right. You don't have to be in a certain room that has a certain outlet. And for me, it's like, yeah, being outside, being in nature. What are the things where you feel connect to that source spirit connection? And are you intentionally creating time and space for that? And seeing that as an essential part of your gifts and your service is like, I need to make sure that my energy is filled up. And I can create that. I can generate that and be open to that source energy, not just like that electrical outlet energy.
Totally. The self-investment piece here is huge, because there's so many individuals, but leaders in general, right? If they're dominated by the tyranny of the urgent, right? There's things that have to get done right now, right? They're often fueled by, you know, capital of the past, the how they got filled up 5 to 10 years ago at this retreat, or how they got all these really, really cool ideas at this conference 3 years ago. But the real work for leaders is to allow yourself to simply be in the stream, to stay connected to that stream of abundance, of energy that's just available to you, because that is how you cultivate it. There's coaches I know listening to this who weeks, a day, 2 days after they did a massive investment in their own life, their business just completely transformed. They had more clients than they had any month prior that year. And that's, when we talk about energy, and like, I love that your networking event is called the Energy Exchange, because it's not a one-for-one trade. It's like when you bring your energy and someone else brings their energy, there's this kind of quantum multiplication that happens in the environment. It just changes everything, and people are drawn to your energy. It's mysterious. I mean, it's deeply mysterious, but that self-investment for leaders is so core to having the life that you want, to having the business, to leading people from this place of soul that you do desire. Like, it's essential. If you're not investing in yourself and bringing energy in, there's really nothing for that can go out. It has to continue to move, not in a legalistic way, like, oh, I got to do this to get this. No, you have to see that this whole thing is a current that's running through you. You're not the mediator that's taking it in and having to do all the work and then pull it out. See yourself as the channel. And then that means if you just continue to open that channel up, it just flows better. The whole thing flows.
The whole thing flows, right? It is that giving and receiving energy. I think a lot of people get stuck or stagnant where it's like, do this to get that. Versus like, if I'm really in that flow and that currency, if I'm low energy, like I know that I can always access that. I can tap into that, right? And it's not a place. It's more of like a state of being and kind of being open to not feeling like you're doing it alone. You're like, let's go, let's do it. This is so good. Oh my God, we could talk for hours. I'm like, I'm here for it. There are like so many golden nuggets for me, like the solar powered element, because I'm working on this body of work around energy intelligence as for leaders of like, how do we manage and protect our own energy? But then how does our energy then impact our teams, our communities, our company culture, our members? And that is the ultimate currency, is our energy. So thank you for that gift for me. I would love for you to share, as we kind of bring things home today, what final advice or words of wisdom would you want to leave people with today? And where can people find you and your work? They want to dive deeper. They're like, this is amazing. I want to know more. Where can they learn more about that?
Oh, thank you. There is a poem by David Wagner called Lost. And I highly encourage you to look this up. Anyone who's listening, look this poem up. But it was written, David Wagner was a poet who lived in the Pacific Northwest. And he wrote this as he observed the rites of passage and initiations of Native peoples up in the Pacific Northwest. And the initiatory process that he observed was essentially sending youth out into the forest to encounter it, and to ultimately encounter themselves, right? That's what the initiation is for. It's to encounter yourself so that you can bring abundance back into your community. And he writes this poem, and the refrain, there's a number of refrains in there that are amazing, but he says, "Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you." And when it comes to shadow work, our work is to some degree, to stand still at that soul level. That soul level, just stand still. The forest is alive. It is vibrant. It is moving towards you. It is communicating to you. The unconscious is activated. And when you stand still, you allow it to become more conscious, like you start to see things. The forest is looking for you. So notice the synchronicities. I think it was Jung that said, God doesn't speak in words, but in synchronicities. And these like little moments of alignment where it's like, ooh, the internal and the external just had a spark. Listen to those, because those are the movements that are happening that are guiding you towards where you're going. And this idea, you know, talked about Disney, Olaf in Frozen 2, actually, I just recently watched it with my kids. And he has this quote. I'm just going to read this quote to you because he's our most optimistic character, I think. And they're about to enter the Enchanted Forest where all of Frozen 2 kind of takes place in terms of the transformation. He goes, did you know that the Enchanted Forest is a place of transformation? I have no idea what that means, but I can't wait to see what it's going to do to each one of us. And I was just like, he was narrating this sense that like, okay, we're going to enter into this forest. I can't wait to see what this is going to do to us. And it's hard to have that perspective if you're not Olaf. But like, if we can step towards the forest, if we can step towards the unknown with a sense of, oh, I can't wait to see how good this is going to get, that changes everything. So it's about abundance. You're moving towards abundance. You're not just moving towards the terrible things. You are moving towards who you were ultimately meant to be.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Be who you came here to be. And that perspective of, I think when we step into the unknown, so often we're terrified. And as human beings, as you know, Alyssa has taught us, like our brains are wired to keep us safe. And what is familiar is safe. So as we step into that unknown, it can feel so terrifying. But if we enter in with like, wow, the sense of wonder and excitement and possibility of like, what is on the other side or what's here for me? Or, and if you're in the forest, if you're going through these threshold moments, again, it's not an accident. And I think when people get scared, they just want to turn around and run away versus like, keep going. And to listen and tune in and pay attention, right? Who are the people that show up to support you on that path? You know, is it people that are walking the path with you? Is it a guide? Is it a mentor? Is it, I think that that's like, as we, Joseph Campbell in The Hero's Journey work says like, once when we follow our bliss, doors will open where there once were walls. So it's like there will be things to support you along the way. One of the things I say is action is the language of the universe. When we take action in service of our vision and our dreams, that's when the synchronicities happen. Oh, this is so good. Yeah, where can people like find you and your work?
Yeah, so I'm at shadowmike.com and you can find me on YouTube, Substack, Instagram handles Dr. Shadowmike, and I want to engage you. So if you feel that spark, let's do a mapping call. So I do, my coaching container is called a journey. It's a shadow work journey and it's an initiation. So we're journeying through the dense dark forest, the enchanted forest together. Let's connect and map that out and see what the trailhead is inviting us into. I also have a column at pathos.com, which is a bit more of the reframing of the religious mindset. So people who have come out of high control religion, or let's just put it like this. If you've come out of a religious environment that eliminated your agency and power from the get-go, your sense of worth and identity, there's so much richness to explore there because we can just flip that on its head. I love engaging. Like, that's not the soul of the work I do, but it's a mythological framework that I often connect people with so that we can actually take the power that has been like draining you and like turn it into an ally, something that can bolster you. So yeah, check me out on all those spaces.
Love that. Well, definitely check him out. Take him up on his offers to go read what he's written and to dive deeper into this work. And there will be links in the show notes to schedule a call with you if you're feeling the call to go into the forest and feel supported on that journey. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing your heart, your soul, your spirit, your energy, your perspective on this topic. I think that there's so much richness to it. And as always, for those of you out there who have been listening, if you love this, you liked it, share it with a friend, rate, review, all of the things. And I always love to hear your insights, takeaways, golden nuggets, what landed for you, what resonated with you. And as always, it's not the information that changes our lives, it's what we do with it. So I hope that there was a golden nugget in here for you that can shift something in how you see yourself and how you show up for you and the work that you are meant to do in the world. So with that, we are going to wrap it up and call it a day. And thank you again, Shadow Mike, for being with us today. And to all of you out there, thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me, Marley.
Until next time, take care. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on another inspiring episode of the Marley Williams podcast. We hope you're leaving here with renewed energy and valuable insights to fuel your leadership, coaching, and speaking endeavors. I'd love to invite you to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast to help us reach more aspiring leaders and speakers like you. We have more exciting episodes and remarkable guests lined up, so make sure to tune in next time. Until then, keep leading with purpose, coaching with heart, and speaking with conviction. This is Marley Williams signing off. See you next week.